Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, August 19th, 2019, and this is episode 176 of the TorchCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today is Eric Nathanson, as always. How you doing, buddy?
I'm a little shocked. I didn't realize we're up to 176. That means that you and I have been doing the two-man tag team for like almost 100 episodes now, it feels like.
God, yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it? And it's funny, I look back at some of our download stats and everything, and this doesn't include all the little interviews that I've posted over the years, the bonus episodes that I used to do with Willie. And yeah, we're well over 200 downloadable bits of content for all of you out there in case you want to go revisit our World Series victory podcast from 2012 and 2014, or various bonus episodes at where we were getting drunk at a bar. Those were fun episodes, by the way. I really miss those days.
The Kirk Reeder episode was my first appearance. So just, I don't know, when you said 176, something clicked in. So thanks to the fans who continue to download this podcast and continue to listen, because Giants baseball, as much as they've been winning, is still a bit of torture. There was some torturous games over the past week. And we'll get into that. They're 4-2 since we last recorded last week. They're 63-62 overall, 3.5 games back of the second wild card, and I think it's 19.5 back of the Dodgers.
Yeah, it doesn't matter anymore.
nobody is looking for it. Yep, 18.5 of the Dodgers. Ooh, nobody is looking. The Dodgers are going to clinch the division sometime in the beginning of September. So at least they're not the Orioles, who have already been eliminated from their division.
Have they actually officially been eliminated? That is just wow. Yep. Wow. Yeah. I know Detroit's having another awful year as well. Hey, at least this isn't the Baltimore Orioles podcast. I'm just saying.
Yeah, right. It could be worse. You know, we were sitting here talking at the beginning of the year, like, this isn't going to be a good season. Maybe we sound a little down about the Giants, but they've given us so much excitement and so much fun over this season that it's been so much easier to do a podcast than personally I expected.
No, absolutely. I don't think the expectation is that they're going to make the playoffs, and we'll talk about it, but they're 3.5 back of the wild card. They got the Phillies, Mets, Brewers, Cubs/Cardinals ahead of them, and it's going to be a tough road. The Giants, again, have to play. I think I was tweeting it out the other day before yesterday's game, and reasonably they should shoot for, you know, I'd say 87-88 wins is probably around the ballpark. I know that the average number of wins for the second wild card since the wild card expanded in 2012 is 89.7 or something like that. It's close to 89-90 wins. That includes those several years in which the wild card had 95, and one year they had 97 wins. No one in this bulk of teams is getting the 97 wins this year. So I think we can pretty much feel assured that it's not going to require that. But out of these five or so teams that are competing for that second wild card, there's always going to be one or two that play really well and get hot. Obviously, we hope that's the Giants. But in order to get to those 88 wins or so, they got to play 6-7 ball the rest of the way. They got to win 2 out of 3 every time, every week, 2 out of 3, 2 out of 3, 2 out of 3 to get to 88. And that's still not a guarantee, because if one of these teams, you know, like, for example, they're 3.5 games behind the Cubs. Let's say the Cubs claim the second wild card spot, but they got a 4-loss. They're 4 back in the loss column, by the way. They, you know, play 600 ball or 620 ball, they would still beat the Giants. So that's why this is going to be a tough road. And the Giants do play the Cubs this week, and they play the Cardinals in September. But that's really it. They don't control too much of their destiny. And one of those two teams is going to win the Central, it looks like. So, you know, they got to do what they can, but a lot of it's going to be out of their hands.
Yeah, you mentioned looking at the schedule, Cubs and Cards. We just talked about how they had all these teams in front of us that they got to play, and that was before the Washington and Philly and Arizona series. And, you know, that Washington series a couple weeks ago is really just sticking out as getting swept really, really hurt their chances, because with 37 games remaining, you're talking about they need to win – you know, they're at 63, so they need to win like at least 22 of them to get to 85 wins. So that's 22 and 15. So maybe they need to win 25 of them, and that puts them at 25 and 12, which is not easy to do at all. Like you said, it's 25 divided by 37. It's 676.
Yep.
The rest of the way, which is difficult for any team to sustain over any stretch of time. Excuse me.
They could have another July and blow it out of the water, but I don't think we can expect that. That was just one of those incredible months. But I will say, though, in August, they started, 2-6 or 2-7 after the trade deadline? And since then, they've been 6-2. So
yeah,
I believe
they're
8-9 now in August, which, you know, last night's game was a bit of a dud, and we'll get to that. But hey, 11 more wins for Bochy to reach 2,000. I think we can officially say that that's going to happen. I don't think they're going to win 10 or fewer games in the next 6 weeks. Knock on wood. Look what they did last year, by the way. Remember the egg that they laid in August and September last year. They had a very similar record to where they are now. I think they were a game or two under 500 last year at this point. And they started that just precipitous slide and just finished out of the race.
Yeah, they were at 500 when August ended last season. And then they won five games in the month of September.
Oh, my God. They were at 500 at the end of the month, huh? Wow.
Yep.
Incredible.
And I believe it was five games during the month of September, which is not going to happen this year. It's totally a different team. Bochy is looking to go out on top. You know, he's enjoying this last little run. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, they won five games in the month of September last year.
That's incredible. Man, the opposite July that they had this year.
Yeah, they were 68-68 heading into August, and then they finished 73 and whatever. I can't even do the math.
That's incredible. Well, I will say this, though. They are now guaranteed of not being able to lose 100 games. We know that.
That's true.
But we thought about that at the beginning of the year. We thought, you know, we don't know where this team is headed. You know, we were thinking, sorry about my dog. I'll have to close my blinds. Give me a second.
That's what was so surprising to me. I mentioned the early beginning of the year earlier because we didn't think they would get to 11 more wins for Bochy. We didn't think they'd have a shot at 500. And here we are hitting the last 6 weeks of the season, and they have the chance to do all of that and actually sneak into the playoffs. So, I mean, I can't believe we're talking about meaningful baseball here in the third week in August. It was not something I expected. We figured we'd be talking about the race for the first draft pick, you know, and that's a credit to everybody in the organization. Bochy, Zaidi, all the carousel players that comes in, you know, thankfully we have fun stuff to talk about. And Johnny Cueto might be coming back soon. He had a rehab start on August 15th for San Jose. He threw 2 2/3, struck out two. He only gave up one hit, a solo home run, and it was the only hard hit ball against him all night. So we might have Cueto back by the end of August, beginning of September. So the Giants might have a top three of the rotation that is just about as good as many of the other teams that are going for it between Bumgarner, Smarsh, and Cueto.
Yeah, and that's a big, big need right now. Their starting pitching has just been, you know, their biggest weakness, I would say, right now. He is going to probably start in September. I think Bochy said he's going to have one more start for San Jose in Modesto this week. And then he's going to have probably one start in Sacramento. And then based on the results of those two games and how he feels, that's when he could be reinserted into the rotation. But they're still thinking early September for that. So and that's great. And I think that's what we need to talk about as we go into this last week of Giants baseball is, they've been trying after, you know, Samardzija, which has been a great surprise this year, and Bum, to fill in those other three slots. And, you know, atypical of previous years, when they have off days, they skip starters, right? They hadn't really done that too much in the past. They would always kind of keep the rotation, but now they're skipping starts to get Bum and Shark, you know, kind of more reloaded back up. But yeah, let's talk about it. Let's talk about D-Rod and, of course, the debut of Logan Webb this week. These are the guys that need to rely on. Tyler Beede has been, you know, tripping up lately. He hasn't been the guy that I saw personally against the New York Mets at Oracle when he went 8 shutout innings, which was incredible. We thought, okay, this is the guy that we want, and this is the guy who we thought we were getting. He has great stuff. He just loses control. He loses focus. You know, Mike Kruko, who of course was a pitcher, has talked extensively about it, and you know, I kind of trust his expert eyes, and he said that he's just lacking that confidence to go for the kill, and he's just losing, you know, his spots around the square there. So Logan Webb, though, he comes off an 80 game drug suspension, and we don't have to get into that, but I will just say, though, I still have a hard time believing any professional athlete who doesn't really know what they're putting in their body, especially when it comes to something that you can't just buy at GNC and put in your body. You know, it's like, come on, man. You really, really, it was an accident. But regardless, he served his time, and he had incredible stats down in Richmond, had a great start in Sacramento, and boom, called up to the big leagues, and he threw pretty well after that first inning against the Diamondbacks. So these are the young kids they have to rely on, and like you said, if they make the playoffs, it's not only gravy, but it would be gravy with making it with these kids.
Yeah, it's because it really has been. I'm still – Shark has been their best starter this year. And Bum, aside from yesterday's hiccup, was – oh, wow, that's the word you use too. That he's been on a roll. They were like 9-1 in his starts or something like that since June 25th. You know, it's no coincidence that the Giants started playing better when the top of the rotation started, you know, locking things down. And, you know, it's Beedy, I don't know what to say with Beedy. I'm shocked that he's actually getting the start tomorrow night in Chicago. I thought that they would skip him, mm-hmm. but they're going Beedy and then D-Rod and then Shark for this series in Chicago. And I was a little surprised Beedy's getting it again, because like Kruko said, he's not finishing. Some of his sliders are turning into those lazy sliders that you just don't finish completely on, and then they flatten out over the plate, and he gets beat up. You mentioned that start against the Mets for Beedy. That was his best game of the season, mm-hmm. you know, and you said it. You were there, so it was kind of like one of those, like, okay, the turnaround is beginning, but it really hasn't. I mean, the guy still got a 5.77 ERA. Yeah. His whip is 1.6. The strikeouts just aren't there, and the walks have been the killer. The walks have been the killer for everybody, not just Beedy. I mean, take Bum and Smarsha out of this situation, and walks have absolutely been a killer for everybody lately. That's what's been getting Tony Watson in late innings, Tyler Beedy. That's what Sean Anderson was having a problem with. Like, just walks on the whole seem to be an issue for the team right now, and it's frustrating because they do have this opportunity. But they need to rely on more than Bumgarner and Samardzija. And like I said, with this 3 games coming up in Chicago, only Shark is getting a start on Thursday. It's going to be difficult against these Cub hitters who actually found their stroke yesterday, especially, you know, the Cubs thrive at home. It's going to be very interesting this week. The Cubs thrive at home and the Giants thrive on the road.
Yeah.
They're literally the opposites. The Cubs are horrible, absolutely horrible on the road. Just this last week, they blew 2 games in the 9th inning when they had multi-run leads.
I mean, of course, one of them was Bryce Harper hit a walk-off grand slam against our old compatriot, Derek Holland, which feel for the guy. In fact, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I did tweet this out several days ago after Derek Holland gave up that grand slam, looking at all of the pitchers that the Giants had traded away at the deadline, and their combined ERA is around 9 or 10 or whatever it was. I mean, they're just the Giants aren't crying right now for giving up on Melanson and Dyson and Holland, and it's been okay so far. But some of that same bug, like you just referred to, has bitten the Giants' current staff as well in terms of wildness and walks. And I think the other night when Tony Watson kind of shit the bed. You tweeted out, "Who broke Watson? Who broke Tony Watson?" And that's what it feels like. These guys that they've been relying upon are just not they're not performing to their season levels. But you know, sometimes these things come in runs, and every player, you know, even a Mike Trout has an 0-for-10 stretch. I mean, it happens. So you just hope to ride out the storm, and then they'll come out on the other side okay.
Yeah, I'm looking back in the last week. So they beat Oakland 3-2 last Tuesday. That was a vintage. That was classic Bum. That was the kind of game where you just kind of settle in and you know what's going on. You know, he gave up the solo shot to Piscotty, mm-hmm. and that was it. And you kind of just like, I'm sure I was tweeting about it that night. That was totally a gem of a game that you're just used to your ace going out and throwing. And then Beattie followed that up the next day with a loss to Oakland 9-5 by only going four innings and allowing four runs on eight hits in four innings. He struck out five and he didn't walk anybody, but you know, so his control got there, but then he's just leaving the ball, like I said, flat over the middle of the zone, and players are crushing it. I mean, the A's, Matt Chapman homered off of him, you know, Grossman doubled, Olsen doubled. So they were hitting the ball hard against them all day long. And after that Oakland series, it was kind of like, well, I don't care about the Bay Bridge thing. The A's are not our rivals.
No,
but
A's, you know, fans think that we are, but yep. Giants fans are like, I think I saw a meme the other day, and it was like a cat who doesn't give a shit about their owner. It was like, these are Giants fans, you know, about the A's. You know, it's like, yeah, you're a cat. Just like, get the fuck out of here. I don't care about you.
And like, no offense to the A's, they have a better record than the Giants.
They're a better team than the Giants. I have no problem admitting that. But there's not a rivalry, right? It's just like, it's like, I don't know, it's like your sister across the bay. You're like, whatever. Hope you're doing. Yeah. I'm glad you're doing well. You know.
No. Nope. Hope I don't have to face you for a championship. That's about it. I mean, yeah. I don't. We don't walk away going, you know, darn those A's. They've won more. But the Giants.
Curse you, Dodgers. Yeah. Exactly.
Right? Yeah. See, it's totally different. The Giants, though, they had a chance. After getting swept by Washington, and then they took 3 or 4 from Philly, they had a chance to have a winning homestand with that final game against Oakland. They were 4-4 during that homestand heading into that game, even after getting swept by Washington. So it was kind of frustrating, you know, to see them lose and think, oh no, here come the Giants again. You know, they're losing a game. They're heading out on the road. They're going to face Arizona, who they're basically tied with in the standings. You know, Oakland just served them and showed them what's up. And then on that Friday night game, the Giants won 7-0 on a shutout. Rodriguez threw 7 shutout innings. Like, where the F did that come from?
So, you know, he's been on that shuttle that he's complained about. And he's made it known in his interview saying that he's tired of being on that San Francisco-Sacramento shuttle. But I think most fans and I'm sure the coaching staff is like, well, then perform. Then you won't be on that shuttle anymore. And so hopefully that had something to do with his performance, because he was just vintage D-Rod from 2018, and he was fantastic, and that is exactly who they need. And before we get into the Arizona series, I just wanted to mention that 3-2 win against Oakland on Tuesday night, which you mentioned, Bum, was just classic Bum. 7 innings, 2 hits, 1 run with this Piscotty home run, and 9 Ks. We got to talk a little bit about Will Smith. And I put it later in the notes, but I figured let's go ahead and talk about that, because our podcast is called Torture Cast. And whenever I tell people, oh, I run a Giants podcast, oh, what is it called? Torture Cast. And I just get that blink, blink, what? You know, it's like, well, if you're not a Giants fan, you don't understand where that came from. That is the exact prototypical game in which we named our podcast after. In fact, you know, Dwayne Kuiper, of course, is famous for coining the term. In fact, I have a little soundbite here.
Giants baseball torture.
It is. And that was like vintage Brian Wilson coming in, you know, they don't hit a lot, but they don't let the other team score a lot either. And you get yourself into sticky situations. And Will Smith really did. He had a 3-run lead in the 9th, and we won't have to go over all the at-bats, but essentially he loaded the bases and then actually walked a run in. And he still closed it out. I mean, it was just, oh man, Twitter was just blowing up that night. It was actually fun to watch Twitter, not fun to watch the game until they closed it out.
Yeah, it was a good thing Scooter hit a sack fly in the 7th to make it a 3-1 ball game. And then you mentioned it, Will Smith comes in, gives up a single to Dustin Garneau, gives up a single to Chris Davis, strikes out Marcus Semien, gives up a single to Matt Chapman, but nobody scores on the play. Then he strikes out Matt Olson. So he's got 2 outs in the inning and the base is loaded. And then he walks Mark Canna before getting Chad Pinder swinging to end the inning. And it was like the first glimpse of like the week of Will Smith, and it was torture. It was absolutely a Brian Wilson flashback to 2010 type game. It was funny because you mentioned Twitter. Giants fans were freaking out, you know, they're gonna blow this and da da da. And I remember sitting there watching that game, and I was sitting there with the wife, and I'm like, I'm not nervous. I'm good. They're still good. I don't care that the bases are loaded. It's a two-run game. They're still good. And then with two outs, when he walked in the run to make it 3-2, I turned away. I said, okay, now I'm nervous.
Now you're nervous, yeah.
Yeah, because I always feel like Will Smith is going to get through it, much like you always felt like Brian Wilson was going to get through it. But this is absolutely the genesis for our name as Torture Cast, because that Tuesday game was torture. I mean, even a couple of the games in Arizona, well, one of the games in Arizona when Yaz hit three home runs was kind of torture. But this was that old school, you know, let a bunch of guys on base in the ninth inning and protect the lead type torture. So it was a great throwback. I totally know what you're talking about. That was so much fun.
And touching upon that, I know that we always talk about the one-run victories. And, of course, this is one of those manufactured one-run victories. Not that they came and won by one run. It's that they allowed another run to score. But that being said, they're 29-11 in one-run games. I mean, this is getting ridiculous. And 12-2 in extra inning games, which we'll get to an extra inning game in this week. But, I mean, my God, if they were even close to 500 in these situations, they would be so far out of the race. I mean, we wouldn't be talking about the race. They'd be 10 games back. It would just be, they'd be 10 games under 500. And we'd be like, all right, yeah, what draft pick are they going to get? So this is the razor's edge that they're playing on. And this is why we're called torture, you know? And thank God they're on the positive side, the extreme positive side of these tight games. And so as a Giants fan, you got to say it's at least entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's funny. You just mentioned extra innings. In nine-inning games this season, 110 nine-inning games this season, they have been outscored 42 and 28 is what, 60? 70. They've been outscored by 70 runs when they play only nine innings. You add in extra inning games, they've outscored the opponent by 20 runs in extra inning games. In those 12-2 games, they're plus 20 runs. So it's like you said, they wouldn't even be in this position if it wasn't for these one-run games and these extra inning games. Because, I mean, quite frankly, a team that is 63-62 shouldn't have a run differential of negative 52 like they do.
No, and this is a big reason why. Exactly. They're converting these close games to wins, but they're losing the blowouts. And that's what happens with the run differential.
Yeah, their Pythagorean win-loss is 57-68. They should be six games worse than they actually are based on the runs scored, runs allowed. But
that's our 10
like
games
mentioned,
back.
Yep. And like you mentioned, these tight games all falling the Giants' way is what's kept them in it, which is what was kind of nice after the Oakland series with the Arizona series. You had D-Rod started out with, you know, such a dominating performance. And, you know, the Giants started finding their hitting stroke in Arizona again. They don't score runs at home. It's ridiculous. The most runs they scored in a game on the homestand before they left town was 9, and that was a 9-6 victory over the Phillies. Every other game was 5 or less, 6 or less, sorry. One game they scored 6. They go on the road, and immediately they score 7, 10, and 11 runs in Arizona. And that 7-0 game, it really got kicked off. In the top of the first inning, they scored 2 runs, and it was like all gone from there. How did they score the first 2 runs? On Longoria on a single. And then later in the game, Longoria helped make it a 5-0 game with driving a home run to left field, looking like the old Evan Longoria.
Might be Mike Piazza on that swing. That one is hammered high and deep, way back there. Adios, pelota! A 2-run strike of lightning for Evan Longoria. Posey scores, and Longoria has now knocked in 4 of the Giants' 5 runs.
Yeah, Longo, you know, coming off the DL, he's looking like the old Longo that we needed back in early July, late June. So it's been a good thing.
Yeah, I was scared because he wasn't doing much at home since he came off the injured list. But again, the Giants go on the road and they become world beaters. You know, 5 runs was enough for D-Rod, even though they added a couple more runs. And I mean, D-Rod earned himself another start with that performance on Thursday. Like I said, he'll be starting in Chicago this week. I don't think he would have earned another start had he given up another 4 or 5 runs. But they looked like a team. And what felt like a really big game, the Giants came out and just stepped on the Diamondbacks' throats.
I wonder what that conversation or conversations are like between D-Rod and his dad. Because you know his dad, who was coming to all of his games last year and some this year, you know, as a former All-Star Hall of Famer catcher, you know, he knows a lot about pitching. We know this. What are those conversations? What is he telling his son about to do to reclaim his form from 2018. I would love to be a fly on the wall in those conversations. I'm sure there's a lot of cursing going on, but yeah. I would love to hear it, even if it's in Spanish. I don't care. Just the emotion. It'd be like a Telemundo episode. I want to hear it.
I have to figure it's something along the lines of keep your mouth shut. You haven't done anything to prove yourself yet. Go out and prove it, and then you can talk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what I was referring to. I'm sure Pudge is like, you know, he was a no-nonsense guy. I mean, he's like basically shut up and, you know, or show up. I mean, that's it. That's it.
As Bill Belichick likes to say, do your job.
Do your job. Exactly.
Right. I was trying to, but I couldn't really get it.
No, it's like, you just got to like deadpan it. Yeah. So Friday's game was another torture game, hashtag. It was incredible because I unfortunately could not watch this game. I was out with the family, but you know, I checked my feed and my little game updates or whatever, and I see that it's 7-2 in the eighth inning. And I'm thinking, oh, sweet. All right, they got this, no problem. And then suddenly it was tied. I was like, wait, what? They go to extra innings and the Giants put up 2 in the 10th. They go up 9-7. Same thing. I'm not watching the game. I get the little update. 9-7. Sweet. Pilar hit a home run. We're good. We're going to close this game out. Nope. The aforementioned Will Smith gave up 2 solo shots in the bottom of the 10th. Tied up again, 9-9. And then, of course, Yaz does his thing and comes up here in the 10th inning with a score tied 9-9.
Here's Yaz, who grounded out to second, leading off the game for the Giants.
Now Dad's holding it up.
And that one is well back there. He hit it there. Almost. And the Giants have gone ahead.
My apologies. That was actually his first home run of the night. But I just love John Miller's call on that one. He hit it, and he hit it there.
Well, yeah, because there was like, a family.
Exactly. A family was out there with the sign. It was just so funny. Because when you hear the audio and you don't have the context, you're like, what? But here's the second home run as we go
way
on
back
here.
There. Goodbye. That is a spectacular home run to the opposite field by Mike Yastrzemski, his second home run of the game. 6-2 Giants.
And, of course, this is when they built that big lead. This is the opposite field home run. This is Barry Bonds territory, by the way.
His rookie season at age 28.
And then, of course, his third at-bat.
Deep. Way back there. Hits onto the balcony. Number 3 for Yastrzemski. Wow. That was a spectacular home run. It's 25 feet above the ground to that balcony. That was over the 413-foot marker. That's a graveyard. And he cleared it. And then some, and the Giants are back ahead 10-9.
Wow. You know, he didn't show a lot of emotion, but when he rounded first base, I mean, he was into it. A rare show of emotion, and that'll bring a smile on Mike Yastrzemski. First time he's ever had 2 home runs in a game, and now he's got 3 in a game.
Just incredible. What, that was so much fun to watch him. Again, on the replay, I didn't watch it live, but to see him round the base at first, and because, you know, when he hits it, he's thinking it's going off the wall. And then when it cleared, he just gives that, rah! You know, you see his fist bump and the whole thing, and you hear the Giants players chatting as he comes in. But, I mean, the guy has never been a classic home run hitter, which I know it speaks to the ball. We all know what the ball's juice this year. If they were playing with a ball from 3 years ago, there's no way he's hitting 3 home runs this game. But that said, the first time he's ever hit 2 home runs in a game, and now he hits 3. And the Giants needed every single one of them because they ended up closing out 10-9.
He's the first Giant to hit 3 home runs in a game since Jarrett Parker did it against the A's at Oakland September 26, 2015. That last home run we hit was off the bat at 106 miles an hour. He hit it 438 feet. That was a bomb. That was to the same territory Dick hit his grand slam in Arizona to get this whole like winning ways started. So for some reason, they like hitting in Arizona. They actually came away with a winning record in Arizona this season. That's 2 years in a row they've had a winning record in Arizona, which really surprised me. But they really seemed to turn it on. And watching Yaz in that game, it was just – that game, I watched all weekend basically without sound. I hate Arizona's ballpark. I hate the sound of that It's a warehouse. Everything is manufactured. Nothing sounds right. So I always have music going, and I have the volume down. And so, like, I didn't even hear some of these calls until now myself. But watching Yastrzemski, it was – I mean, it was one of those games where Yaz had to hit the three home runs. It wasn't like they were up 16-2. You know, he needed that third home run in the 11th inning. Will Smith, he blew it. The Giants had a 7-2 lead, and Tony Watson absolutely just kept giving Arizona base runners. I don't know off the top of my head how many walks he had. There it is. Apparently, Tony Watson didn't walk anybody, but allowed four hits and four runs, and two of those were home runs in a third of an inning.
Yeah.
And then Coonrod came in to replace Watson and allowed the three-run bomb to Adam Jones. Gustave was fine. And then Will Smith came in and allowed the two solo home runs in the bottom of the ninth to extend the game to the 11th. So much so that Bochy went out and took Will Smith out of the game in the bottom of the 11th with two outs to bring in Trevor Gott as a right-hander to face a right-hander.
Because he had put two runners on.
Yep, and they were not screwing around. That was a game where it's funny. Again, what gets lost is Samardzija had a decent outing again. 5 1/3, 4 Ks, two runs. But, you know, the story of the game was Mike Yastrzemski and Kevin Pillar. Pillar went, I think, 5 for 5, or he had 5 hits that game.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Hit 2 home runs, 4 for 4, my bet. No.
He went 5 for 5 the next game.
Oh, on Saturday, yeah. He went 2 for 4 on Friday night with 2 homers of his own. And I really felt like had they got it to him again, he might have homered again. It was just that kind of night. And it was, again, those are the kind of games that the Giants are winning. That was probably right up there. Blowing the lead and still winning the game was right up there with coming back from 8 runs down against Cincinnati.
Oh, it was so much fun, even though I wasn't watching the game, just to see the Twitter fly and the updates fly. And I had prematurely tweeted out that Yaz had taken the Giants' home run lead because, like you said, his 2 home run performance was overshadowed. And it was overshadowed in my mind because I did the math and I'm like, oh my God, he's got 16 home runs. He leads the Giants. And I was like, oh, wait. That's right. Pillar hit 2, so he has 17 now. Oh, okay. Oops, sorry. Pillar is 17. Yaz is 16. But Yaz has 200 fewer at-bats than Pillar. I mean, it's incredible. The guy leads the Giants by far in at-bats per home run. It's like at 10.5 or something like that. I mean, it's not quite – no, sorry, 14. It's at 14.5. The league leaders, like – Bellinger and Yelich and Trout are all around the 10 at bats per home run level. But I remember Barry Bonds, you know, he was at the 7-8 at bat level. That's where he was. But for Mike Yastrzemski to be producing at this level is just absolutely incredible. He can hit 250 all year. I don't care if he's, you know, him and Pillar should reach 20 home runs, which will be the first time since Crawford in 2015.
Yeah, it's funny. Pillar's been doing so well, we almost take it for granted at this point. And Grant Brisby did a nice article on The Athletic this week looking back at 20 home run seasons and which Giants have a chance to do it. And Yaz and Pillar were both on this list, and obviously their chances increased. The other thing about Friday was Yaz led off. That was his first game as a leadoff hitter. Yep. And I've been screaming for him to lead off for about 2-3 weeks now. I'm getting tired of the Brandon Belt experiment at the top, which seems to be over. I love that Belt gets on base, but sometimes you need a hit. And Yastrzemski has been providing that at the top. It just seems like young spark type thing, and it really propelled them. And Saturday, I mean, the hits just didn't stop. They won 11-6. Like you said, Pillar had 5 hits. Belt, who I just mentioned, had a grand slam and was all backing Logan Webb, who made his major league debut on Saturday.
Yeah, Brandon Belt came to the plate in the top of the second with nobody out and the bases loaded. Arizona was already up 2-0 because of that first inning that Logan Webb had. You know, he had his jitters and nerves and all that. It's understandable. In fact, he said that Vogelsong really helped him down in Sacramento because he noticed that he was nervous when he was going out to the mound, and he kind of talked him down, so he was going to take that into his major league start. But you could see those jitters. But here's Brandon Belt saying, I got your back, buddy.
Arizona on the infield. That ball is hit high and deep. Right field, way back there. Goodbye! That's a grand slam for Brandon Belt. That has to feel so good. He has struggled for so long and has shown signs of coming out of it in this series. And now, grand salami time.
Yeah, so he had six RBIs in the game overall, so that propelled the Giants to that win. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Brandon Belt, I think his on-base percentage and the whole, you know, getting on and scoring, he leads the team in runs and all that stuff. It's great. It's great. But he's not fast. His batting average is low. And he can occasionally run into one. So I like the change. I agree with you. I think that Yaz getting up at the top, even if his on-base percentage isn't as high as Belt's, just provided at least a change and a spark to the lineup. And then, of course, Belt has responded with better performance down in the 7 or 8 hole. So it's been good overall.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the stat, and I can't. But it's weird how many grand slams the Giants have hit this year. Longo had an opportunity later in the same inning. The Giants had the chance to hit two grand slams in the same inning, but Longo could only muster a sacrifice fly. It was something else. And, you know, you mentioned Logan Webb was shaky in that first inning, and it didn't help that Aramis Garcia just couldn't track down a pop-up over his head. It was the type of play where right when it happened, everybody's like, Belt would have had that. But, yeah, the pop-up fell in because Belt was, I think, playing left at that time. The pop-up fell in. He gave up an earned run. One run was unearned. And then the Giants going out in the top of the second between Belt's grand slam and Longo's home run made a 5-2 game. And I think that also calmed Logan Webb down. All those jitters that were there, like the adrenaline just naturally ran out at that point. You know, he got up, he bunted, he went back and sat down, you know, so he wasn't running the bases and everything kind of calmed down and he was able to go out there. And he's a little wild, but that's to be expected in his first, you know, his major league debut. You know, from what I hear is he's not wild in general, and you can see his slider's got great break. He's got good command of the fastball. Nothing he throws is straight. His fastball definitely tails, especially in and up on a right-hander. So he has the tools, and he was coming off of like 7 shutout innings in Sacramento. So I'm glad the Giants gave him the chance, and he earned himself another start by going out there and having such a great first start. He'll be facing Oakland this weekend, the team he grew up rooting for.
So after that 11-6 victory, they won the first 3 of this 4-game series. And with Bumgarner going yesterday, you're thinking, okay, the Giants have won 9 out of his last 10 starts. We're going to sweep this mother. And unfortunately, it just didn't happen. Bumgarner in the very first inning kind of was the story of the game. He retired the first 2 hitters, and then there was a double, a walk, a triple, and then a single, and suddenly it was 3-0 Arizona, and they didn't have their hitting shoes on, and he allowed another run later on a home run, and they ended up losing that game. So it was just kind of a wah-wah at the end, you know? It was like, oh, just it was going to be the cherry on top. They're going to go 5-1 this week, which you called, by the way, last week. You're like, they need to go 5-1 or at least 4-2. They did go 4-2, but, man, they... They should have gone 5-1, but you know what? We're not gonna crucify Bumgarner for what he's done because he's been doing so well before that. So unfortunately, they wrap up the week 4-2. That's fine. It's fine. But let's talk about who's hot and who's not since we recorded. Austin Slater is 8 for his last 16. That's 500. 2 doubles and 2 RBI. Pilar, of course, just was on fire this week. 458, 11 for 24, 2 doubles, 2 home runs, 6 RBI. Yaz, of course, with the 3 home run game, hit 4 for the week, 381 with 7 RBI. So, and then, of course, Brandon Belt had at least 6 RBIs this week. So, fantastic. You want to talk about who's not?
No, but I will. surprisingly, we have Dickerson on the who's not list this week. Since he's come off the DL, he's 1 for 10. I think the one hit's just a single, too. He has not looked the same since he's come back from the disabled list and is showing him the results. He's just not hitting the ball as hard. He's not turning around on it. Brandon Crawford, once again. We should just give him some award this year and put him to the side because he was 4 for 17 in the last week. And once again, every time he came to the plate yesterday, it just felt like the rally was going to get killed.
And hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to Torture Cast.
Yeah, well, Brandon, start hitting.
Yeah, we like, I feel so bad when we use that bumper at the beginning, and then we have to talk about how bad he's been, because he's such a nice guy, he's got a great family, but, you know, I, like many Giants fans, I'm getting tired of watching Crawford flail and flail and flail. He really should have been pinch hit for yesterday, because Avelino was brought up, so they could have slid Avelino into the infield. They could have pinch hit with Solano, and then... not Solano, because Solano's playing third. They could have pinch hit with Longoria because he had the day off. And then they could have slid Avelino back out there if they wanted to. But Bochy loves his guys, and Crawford's one of his guys. So every week he's going to be on those lists, just like last week when he went 4-for-17. And then we have the closer. Like, what's going on with Will Smith? He's got 4 blown saves in 10 opportunities in the second half of the season. That was after giving up the home run to Joey Gallo in the All-Star game. He was 23-of-23 in the first half, the 1.98 ERA. He now has a 4.42 ERA, and he's just not getting the job done. His slider's not biting like it used to in on the right-handers. That was the problem for that torture game last week, the Tuesday night game, when he walked in the run and all that. All he had was his fastball. And I give him credit for getting out of that with his fastball. But he didn't have his breaking stuff. Not only were they spitting on it, it just wasn't even crossing the plate in the zone. So I don't know if he's okay. I don't know if he's broke. We didn't put Tony Watson on here either, who probably could be a who's not right now because he's a bit broke. I don't know if this is a domino effect from the bullpen being traded away or if maybe something did happen with Smith during the All-Star game. But I don't know about you. I'm not too worried about it. I think he'll be okay the rest of the way.
I think so, too. And the good thing to note is that it's all washed off the slate because they won all 4 games in which he blew those saves. So the Giants have not lost a game because of Will Smith. They've almost lost 4 games because of Will Smith, but they have not lost those games. So you just kind of look back and go, okay, well, whatever. They didn't lose those games. So it's kind of like a new day every time, right? You know, no harm, no foul, as they say. Okay, so we'll talk about transactions right now. Again, we always have a long list every week we talk about. This is the Farhan Zaidi era of San Francisco Giants baseball. But on August 13th, Alex Dickerson was sent to the minors for rehab. Aramis Garcia was also called up from the minors. Then on the 14th, Dickerson was removed from the 10-day IL and then was sent to a minors rehab assignment. Pablo Sandoval, unfortunately, went on the 10-day IL on August 14th as well with right elbow inflammation. And I know that 2 days ago, Bochy said that he's not really progressing. So that's a little bit of a concern because he's been such a spark plug for the Giants this year. Also on the 14th, Williams Drez went to the minors. Aramis Garcia sent back down. On the 15th, Kyle Bearclaw, we always like to call him Bearclaw, was DFA'd. Fernando Abad was purchased. His contract was purchased from the minors. D-Rod, of course, was brought up. Then Barclaw cleared waivers, was outrighted to Sacramento. Logan Webb was called up on the 17th, made his major league debut. Joey Rickard was sent back down. And then Avelino was called up yesterday, as well as Travis Bergen was DFA'd. And I haven't heard if he's cleared or, you know, anything like that.
He'll be sent back to the Blue Jays. They took him in the Rule 5 draft.
Oh, that's right. He was a Rule 5. Yes.
Yeah, the Giants started the season with 2 Rule 5 guys. I forget the other one was. Yeah, I forget who the other one was at this point, but he's back with Houston. It was an outfielder. And now Bergen will probably end up back with Toronto. He just got nailed by the roster crunch. They needed room for Logan Webb, and they brought up Avelino because of, you know, mentioned Pablo. He's got the stuff going on his elbow. And there was a little interesting tidbit that came out this week. The Giants have had in the works in one of the last games of the season to have Pablo play all 9 positions in one game.
Yes.
Now, as far as, you know, it's a game that doesn't affect, you know, standings, as Stephen Vogt liked to say, you know, hopefully we'll clinch by then. Yeah, okay, Stephen. But there was an idea that Pablo might play all 9 positions in a game. And the thing in his elbow is what could prevent him from actually pitching in a game. But many of the players are saying if he's healthy, he'll find a way to do it. Buster Posey once played all 9 positions in a game in college. Yeah. And not only did he play all 9 positions in that game, he hit a grand slam in the same game. So not that we can expect Pablo to do the same, but that was a nice little tidbit to come up. And it just shows you how much Pablo was loved by Bochy and, you know, by the players, if Bochy wanted to do something like that in his final days. So hopefully Pablo does get healthy and can come back and the stuff in his elbow gets cleared out. But I guess it's almost like what Jake Arrieta has been dealing with, and they're shutting him down for the rest of the year. So,
all right. You want to take care of the minor league report?
Yeah, I figured this week, first I want to mention yesterday, Aaron Phillips of San Jose, he fired a one hitter. He faced 28 batters, just one over the minimum. And that's important to note because in the minor leagues, pitchers don't pitch complete games. Right. They don't get the opportunity. He only threw like 91, 92 pitches, which is why he had the opportunity. Down in the minors, they care more about pitch count than they do results, which makes sense because it's instructional and developmental. That's the first complete game by San Jose Giants pitcher since Eric Surkamp in 2010.
Oh, Surkamp, oh my God. Blast from the
right?
past.
Right, that's why I had to bring it up, because, you know, the Surkamp name. So, tip of the cap to Aaron Phillips. I'd never heard of him before. He's not one of their high prospects or anything like that. But, you know, that's kind of a neat little thing to do, especially in the California League, which the bats do seem to come alive. So, for this week in the minor league report, I don't want to focus on anyone specific like I did with Aaron Phillips. I figure the minor league seasons are wrapping up, so let's do a quick little run-through on how the teams have done this year. In AAA in the Pacific Coast League, Sacramento is 66-59 overall. They're in first place in their division, and apparently they play a full slate of games in the Pacific Coast League, so there's no, like, first-half champion and second-half champion. There are four divisions in the Pacific Coast League, and you win your division, you're in the playoffs. And currently Sacramento is in first place by a game in their division with 15 games remaining. So chances are Sacramento could not only be playing for the Pacific Coast League title, they could be playing in the AAA World Series after that when the two AAA leagues face each other. So Sacramento 66-59 in first place. Down at the Eastern League, AA over in Richmond, the Flying Squirrels, they have the worst record in their league. They are 46-78. They have 15 games remaining. They're better in the second half. They're 23-34 in the second half, so that's 10 games better. They have 15 games remaining, and there's not much to say about Richmond as far as making the playoffs because that's not going to happen. Most recently, and you just mentioned this to me pre-show, we didn't talk about this last week. Most recently, Joey Bart and Elio Ramos were sent to Richmond from Salem Kaiser in single A, I guess just so they can see how they do for the last couple weeks of the season.
San Jose. Yeah, they were in San Jose.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They were. That was the second promotion. I forgot. So they've got some new blood. Obviously, it's not for a playoff push like Sacramento is on right now. So they're just trying to see what Bart and Ramos have to offer. And the other scuttlebutt I've heard lately is that Posey is the one that may not be changing positions, and they might start looking for another position for Joey Bart.
That's not a long-term proposition. I don't quite understand that, but whatever.
Yeah, I don't either. It's a couple of years, if that, you know. But, I mean, Posey, he's what he is behind the plate, and it's hard to replace that.
He's really good, yeah.
Yep. All right, so we moved to San Jose, where Ramos and Bart were recently in the Cal League, Advanced A. They're 56-69 overall, but 26-30 in the second half. So, again, the team improved in the second half, but they're completely out of it, and they're not going to get into the Cal League playoffs. I've got two more. In regular A ball in the Sally League, which is the South Atlantic League, the Augusta Green Jackets are 67-57 overall. They missed the first half title by a half a game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they're 31-25 in the second half, and they're one game back. So the Green Jackets have a chance to make the playoffs. I just love the Augusta Green Jackets name. I mean, it's a nice little play on words for the Masters, as well as they have a logo that's like a wasp or something, or a hornet.
Yeah, in fact, my daughter, when she's 13 now, but when she played T-ball, her first team was the Green Jackets, because here in Gilroy, their Little League T-ball division are named after minor league teams. So it was really cool. Yeah, we had like the Outlaws and the Green Jackets and, you know, those kind of teams. So she was on the Green Jackets. She had the logo of the little wasp or whatever on her shirt. And it was fantastic. I thought it was cool.
That is cool. We didn't do that. We did all When I was in T-ball, we actually did hockey teams, and I was a North Star, which the North Stars don't even exist anymore.
Right.
But after that, we were baseball teams. And as you can guess, with my dad managing, I was the Giants probably like 10 times.
Yeah, I didn't get the Giants until this last year with my son. The first time I've ever had the Giants.
You're in that area. So people can't be like, oh, he's a Giants fan. We'll let him be the Giants like they did with my dad in Chicago. Nope.
Yeah.
Everybody wants
I want to be the Nationals. Everyone's like, okay, go ahead. Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care. Yeah.
Nobody cares about the Nats. Just like Cubs fans didn't care about the Giants.
Yep. Exactly.
And in the Northwestern League, where Joey Barr started, since he's the thread that is connecting all these teams, in low A short season, Salem Kaiser is 37-25 overall. They won their first half division, so they're in the playoffs. They're selling playoff tickets in Oregon right now, but they're 11-13 in the second half, so they're not as good without their best players, is what I'm seeing. So they will make the playoffs. So that's a bit of a catch-up on some of the minor league teams. I will probably be looking in 2 weeks when the season – all these seasons end on Labor Day. So after Labor Day, from one of the minor league reports, I'll probably highlight some players that had great seasons in Sacramento and in Richmond and in San Jose, people other than the Joey Barts and the Helio Ramoses of the world.
Yeah. All right, Eric. Back by popular demand. They've been clamming for it. Well, maybe three people. But it's time to resurrect Guess That Giant. I mean, you know, you started this. All right, buddy. And this time, I'm going to quiz you. All right. I won't go too esoteric, but we're going to start with some more esoteric tidbits of information. So you ready?
Yes, let's see how quickly I can get the media guide open.
All right.
Not quick enough.
All right, all right. May not be a current Giant. That's your first clue.
Okay, all right.
But that's okay, because you're going to get that clue because of the first clue, his birth date. He was born on November 28, 1965 in Bishop, California. I don't expect any fans out there to know the birth dates of former Giants, but I figured
Bishop, California.
I start with the hard ones.
Nope, that would be an incorrect guess. I don't know just yet.
No problem, but at least you know it's not a current Giant. So you can start looking at your Rolodex here. Okay, he was also the starting quarterback of the Carson Senators football team in high school, which was in Carson City, Nevada.
Huh. I'm going to take my first guess.
Yeah, go ahead. Throw it out there.
Dave
Dvecki. That's okay. That was a good guess. Okay, he was originally selected by the New York Mets from Carson High School, which I just told you anyway. But he was originally drafted as a Met.
Mike Kruko.
That is also incorrect. All right, we're going to move on. We're going to start still some pretty hard ones here. I'm sorry.
Harder than anything
hard ones
I gave you. No, I'm totally good with you.
No, because you know why? I don't expect anyone to know these. This is just fun to kind of research the history of some of our former players here. Okay, he's also the grandson of former Major League outfielder Burt Griffith, which, of course, everyone knows that.
Burt Griffith.
I'm just letting you whittle down the names. That's all I'm doing right now.
I can't. There's not a Griffith.
And yeah, his really last name is definitely not Griffith.
No, and it definitely means that he's white.
See, you got something there.
Yes, I will
concede he is white.
Yes,
he's Caucasian.
Bert played so long ago that
very
Bert
good
would have played in the time.
That's a good catch. I like it.
All right. Brett Butler?
Incorrect. All right. He accepted a baseball scholarship to play for the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, a UNLV baseball player.
I think I got it.
Oh, yep.
Matt Williams.
Ding, 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 ding. He has it. Matt Williams. All right. Hey, you know what? That is not bad, dude. That is like some really reaching facts that I got here. So if anyone out there actually guessed Matt Williams before him, and not by a lucky guess, but actually knowing it, let us know. But
that was hard, yeah.
That was a good pull, Eric. So yeah, so the other facts I had in here as I started to delve into his major league career, he's the only player to hit at least one World Series home run for three different major league teams. He also, of course, finished second in the 1994 voting for the NL MVP behind Jeff Bagwell of the Houston Astros. And of course, as we get more obvious with our facts here, his best season was 1994, in which he hit a National League best 43 home runs and had an impressive 96 RBI in only 110 games. Of course, the season was shortened by a strike that year. He was on pace for actually 61 that year. He became eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2009. He received just 1.3% of the votes, and he was dropped off the ballot. He's married to Phoenix news anchor Erica Monroe, who is a news anchor for KTVK in Phoenix. And she also is the hostess and creator for the cooking and lifestyle website, The Hopeless Housewife. And they are parents of one child and live in Bel Air, California. That's his third wife, by the way. Anyway,
that would make sense. Yeah, because he used to coach in Arizona. I only got it because I remember Matt Williams and UNLV hearing a tidbit about that once upon a time, or else you would have had to go farther.
That's the only reason
I remember it. Yeah.
Sorry, I started with the hard stuff, but hey.
Well, Maddie, what you did not mention is Matt Williams is currently the third base coach for the Oakland Athletics.
Correct. He is currently the third base coach. He was doing a little bit of Giants post-game stuff in 2017, right before he was hired by the A's in November of 2017 to be the third base coach. And, of course, we all know the infamous managerial blunder he made against the Giants in the 2014 NLDS. And he was the manager of the Nationals for 2 years. And that first year he played the Giants, I mean, he had 96 wins in his first year as manager. He was fantastic. The next year, they actually won 83 games. They were 83-79, and he was fired after that year. So, and there's a lot of, information suggesting that the blunder he made with the pitching decision against the Giants contributed to his ultimate demise. So,
I wouldn't have blamed them on. I still don't know why he pulled Zimmerman from that game, but hey, yeah, thanks.
When he came out and pulled him, I was obviously watching the game, and I was just like, thank you. Thank you. Yep. Are you that much of a Giants fan, Matt? Do you owe the Giants that much? You're going to pull Zimmerman? Really? Okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah, the dugout talked about how they had new life in them after they saw Zimmerman being pulled because they couldn't do anything off of him. That was the 18-inning game. I think we referenced it last week. Yep. That was the 18-inning game because we did reference it, talking about Joe Panic because he was the one that worked the walk.
And then Pablo drilled him in, yep.
Pablo hit the double down the line, and then I don't remember how Posey ended up replacing him on the bases, but Posey got thrown out at home, and they had to play another 9 innings. Wow,
games,
Matt Williams. Man. Yeah, it was all funny because I love Matt Williams. I tried to imitate the tuck the chin into the shoulder all the time when I was younger. Robbie was my guy, but I tried to do that with Matt.
No, absolutely. Right. That was fantastic. All right, so
that was fun. I like that one.
Yeah, no, I bring it back. Why not? All right, this week in Giants history, you got a good one here.
Yeah, I went way back because I knew that this was the time of the year. Back in 1951, the Giants fell 13 games behind the Brooklyn Dodgers. The New York Giants fell 13 games behind the Brooklyn Dodgers after play on August 11th. And nobody gave them a chance in hell of winning the division at that point. Well, the Giants went 36-11 the rest of the way. And it was all started with a 16-game winning streak from August 12th to August 27th. And if they don't win those 16 straight games, we never have the shot heard around the world. Maybe the Dodgers-Giants rivalry isn't quite what it is at this point. But the 1951 team started on their streak during this time of year, their 16-game winning streak, and their epic comeback to take over first place and beat the Dodgers in a three-game series on October 3rd, 1951. And they made the World Series. They lost in 5 games to the Yankees. They were gassed. I'm absolutely sure of it. But this stretch of time was the beginning of the epic comeback. And it was funny because when I was researching this, I thought to myself, how many games were they up in 1993 at this time of year? And I didn't want to go into it. So we'll stick with the good thing. And remember that 1951 team. Because when I looked at 93, I was like, nope, I'm not doing this to us. Stuff's going too well right now.
I've talked about it before, but I was actually at Candlestick Park on the last day of the Major League season in 1993 watching the 49ers play the Vikings. My dad's company had a suite that day, so I was up in a suite at Candlestick Park watching the football game, and I couldn't give a shit less about the football game. And up on the, you know, old CRT TV hanging up there, the 4x3, tiny little, you know, 12-inch TV, I was watching as the Giants melted down in Atlanta. Colorado.
No, Los Angeles. No, they lost in L.A. Atlanta won in Colorado.
That's right. L.A. won in Colorado. And that year, L.A. beat Colorado because that was their inaugural year. It was Atlanta playing Colorado. That's what happened. Atlanta beat Colorado all 12 games that year. They were 12-0 against the Rockies, and they couldn't lose one single game. Of course, the Giants lost against the Dodgers in L.A., and they lost the division by one game with 103 wins. And I didn't care about the game that day, the Niners game.
That was the only season that the Braves and the Rockies were in the same division because that was it. That was the final year playoffs were played with the two-division format. 95 started the wild card, so they were split into three divisions at that time. Atlanta was handed those 12 wins. I mean, granted, the Giants could have won one more game against the Rockies themselves, and it wouldn't have been an issue. But just the timing and everything of that.
A team does not go 12-0 against another major league team. That just doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen anymore.
They did, and that was the difference in the season, at least for preventing a playoff game. But anyway, we're not bitter at all. All right, so coming up, the Giants, of course, have an off day today. Then they're 3 in the friendly confines of Wrigley Field against the Cubs, which are going to be very important and very important in your household. I know that is going to be very well watched. And then they have a very weird Friday off day. That is just like, what? But it's because they have interleague with the A's, and so they do 2-2 typically. And so they're going to put those two games on Saturday and Sunday instead of a midweek T-spot. So two off days this week. So when we record next Monday, it's only going to be 5 games. And I mean, obviously at minimum, they need to go 3-2, but to be in this race, Eric, let's be honest, they got to go 4-1. They have to go 4-1. 3-2 ain't going to cut it because another team in the race is going to go 4-1. Or at least a couple teams are going to go 3-2 and they're going to be just extending the season, right? Fewer and fewer games left. If they got to erase this 2.5, 3.5 game lead, because that's the only chance they're going to have.
Yeah, these games in Chicago are they're not going to be easy because, like I said, the Cubs are good at home and the Giants are good on the road. I'm hoping the Giants can keep hitting. The Cubs are sending out Cole Hamels tomorrow night, who has pitched. He's pitched decently this season, but he's coming off an injury recently. Mm-hmm. They faced Darvish on Wednesday, and I'm going to be honest, Darvish is like lights out right now. Right. The guy went 100 batters in a row without walking anybody when walks were his biggest problem. Yeah, exactly. And then they face Hendricks on Thursday. So they really need to get to Hamels tomorrow to try to set a tone for the series. Hopefully they'll start scoring early and often. But, like, I totally agree. They have to go, like, at least 4-1 to maintain any semblance in the race. Because if they go 3-2 or 2-3 and 1-4, I think it's pretty much over. The fact that they come home the week after, I don't trust them at home. So I want them to win these games on the road, because when they come home, I'm scared that they're going to go, you know, next home stands 6 games. So I'm scared they'll go 2-4, you know, so they need to win these games on the road. And like you said, really looking forward to this Cubs series in my household. Both teams are competing right now. The Cubs are the ones in the wild card race, but they're tied with the Cardinals atop their division. The Brewers are 2 back. So, you know, they've got something to fight for. It's not like they're, you know, going and playing the Detroit Tigers or Baltimore Orioles this week. They've really got to put together some good games to win some stuff here.
Well, the Dodgers have the best home record in the National League at 48-16, which is just ridiculous. But the Cubs are not too far back at 41-19. I mean, that is better than 6-6-7 ball. They have won more than 2 of 3 of every home game. They're only 25-39 on the road, which you referred to earlier, so they kind of suck on the road. That's why they're just, you know, 8 games above 500. The Giants, however, have the third best road record in the National League at 34-29. But of course, we struggle at home, 29-33. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting battle here because the Giants are road warriors, but the Cubs have the second best you know, home record. So it's going to be a tough call for the Giants. It really is. And in fact, if they lose two out of three, that's not going to be any surprise whatsoever, especially because Bumgarner's not pitching this series either. So and we got Beattie going first. So it's going to be a tough call.
If they sweep the Cubs, I believe that's that's the
there
bottom
you go.
Line.
I think that's a good call, because if they sweep, they're playing a team that's over 500, because they're playing under 500 against teams that have a winning record. But of course, knocking down a team that's ahead of them right now. So even if the Cubs were to win the Central and they took two out of three, that means the Cardinals are doing that much worse. So it's all good. They are ahead of them. It's them and the Cardinals. They play twice. One of them is going to win, you know, the Central, but you got to beat up both of them. So, all right. Well, that'll do it for episode 176 of the Torture Cast. You can follow us collectively at Torture Cast on Twitter. You can like us on Facebook. Just Google us there. You can also check out our articles and our podcasts at torchcast.com. Of course, if you're listening to this, you know where to get your podcast. You can follow us individually at Two Out Hits for Eric. That's with the number two. Myself at ChadK21. Eric, you got anything else to pimp?
No, not really. Although I am thinking reviving my piece from 6 years ago that first got me on this podcast and posting it on TortureCast. It is a post all about how I grew up in Chicago as a Giants fan. So I think I'm going to put that on the TortureCast website during this Cubs series.
Oh, that's good. In fact, I know just what, 3 or 4 days ago, I think it was Thursday. So yeah, 4 days ago or so, was the 8-year anniversary of my first appearance on TortureCast. Even though that Eric and I are the voices now, we did not start this podcast. That's Willie and Ben and Mike. And I, similarly to Eric, had sent in a segment called Out of Left Field about statistical oddities and little stories and stuff like that. And when Mike left the podcast, they invited me to join. But I first was a guest, and then shortly thereafter became a regular, and then kind of the same with Eric. So it's amazing. Eric, I've been doing this podcast for 8 years. It's like, wait, what? My son's only 9. My daughter's 13. It's like most of their lives I've been doing this podcast. But hey, you know, we started right after their first World Series. We had no idea they're going to win two more. And Eric and I think are, you know, keeping it regular, even though they're not having the greatest last couple of years. We're bringing the content to you. We care about this team. We're not making money. This is our passion. This is our hobby. And we're having fun doing it. So we really do appreciate all of your downloads and everyone who's interacting with us on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook. We really appreciate it. And hang in there. The Giants are going to be better again. And who knows, maybe they'll surprise us and shock the world and get into the playoffs this year.
Go Giants. I don't have much else.
I had a little Peter Griffin there I was going to play, but I'll go ahead and pause that. Anyway, thank you for listening to episode 176. We'll see you next week for 177. Until then, a boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.